If you'd like to turn in your Bible, this morning we're going to be returning to our study of Matthew. We're about to wrap it up. We're in Matthew 27. We're going to be looking at verses 62 through 66 this morning. Before that, I just want to challenge us once again with the idea that God is always at work in the world. Sometimes it may be more apparent, other times it may not be as apparent. But we need to understand some things, and one of those is this, is God is working out absolutely everything according to his perfect will and purpose. And as we've gone through the ministry of Jesus, and we've gone through especially that Passion Week and all the things that took place in the Passion Week, we just see the hand of God's providence and work in all of that, as horrible as some of it looks. We need to understand some things, and one of those is this, is God uses even sometimes the wicked intentions of people to bring about his predetermined plan. We see that so clearly in the cross and in all the things that led up to that. So let's begin this morning with verse 62. But the next day, which was after the day of preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered in company with Pilate. Now, you know, may not know that much about the priestly line and the Pharisees, but one of the interesting things is this, is what you would find is they were very much at odds very often with particular things. One of the interesting things, as far as our current place of study is this, is they totally disagreed with one another on the issue of the resurrection. The Pharisees believed in bodily resurrection. The Sadducees, on the other hand, didn't. So it's really interesting that you see these two groups of people that were really at odds with one another on this particular issue. Now as we come to the point that we see and we learn about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It's a measure of just how far they're willing to go. Because what they share with one another is basically, guys, an intense hatred of Jesus Christ and all that he represented and all that he stood for and all that he taught. Jesus' body is now in the tomb, and they would love to keep it there. As a matter of fact, they are bound and determined to keep the body of Jesus in the tomb. The last thing in the world that they would like to see at this point is for Jesus to come alive again. And they are going to do anything and everything they can to prevent that from happening, and in particular to keep people from concluding that that's happened when in their own mindset it has not. See, the resurrection would prove the Sadducees to be wrong in their basic belief system. It would turn their understanding of just about everything upside down. It would prove the claims of Jesus, which would show them to be wrong in the eyes of the people. It would call to question their very own relationship with Jesus, with God. Because remember, these were the religious leaders, the Jewish religious leaders. But regardless of their theological differences, they're bound together with this intense hatred of Jesus. And they decide that they must do whatever is necessary to keep the dead body of Jesus in the tomb. Jesus was born, he died and was buried on Friday. So what we're looking at here would be Saturday, which is also the Sabbath day. Another thing that we might want to consider this morning is the fact that the Pharisees were strict Sabbatarians, and that is, you didn't hardly do anything on the Sabbath day. And yet you see them on that Sabbath day going to Pilate and encouraging him to allow them to do some particular things. So what I'm saying here, guys, is they're making an exception of their strict Sabbatarianism here just by doing the things that they're doing. It's amazing how we can see people sometimes fudging on their beliefs in order to accomplish particular ends. Need I even mention politics? I mean, how often does that sort of thing take place? And we need to understand something, that politics is a real issue in our country, the world today, right? But we need to understand something. They always have been. That in a sense, a lot of what's going on here is politically oriented. They came to Pilate and they said, Lord, that is calling Pilate Lord, call to mind that when he was living, the impostor said, within 3 days, I am to be raised up. Now, you need to understand here that the particular word that is translated very often here as resurrection is not typically the one that is used for resurrection, but it means fundamentally the same thing. And that's the idea that someone's dead and then they're going to be raised back to life. We talked a lot about this over the last couple of weeks, and it's as though the disciples and the women that we talked about, those special women that were, in essence, disciples of Jesus, how we get the impression as we read the Gospels that they were dumbfounded, in a sense, when Jesus died, and they were stunned by it, and they didn't know what to do with it. And it seems through their actions that they had the idea that the Jesus saga was over. That Jesus has died, and that's kind of the end of the story. It's almost as like they've forgotten that Jesus had told them repeatedly that he would be dead for 3 days and then he would be resurrected to life once again. It's as if they look upon it as the end of everything. And we're going to see this as well. Even when Jesus is resurrected, the first response to James and Peter is they go and they look in the tomb once the women have gone there and they found it empty. They go and they look, but they walk away still not understanding that Jesus has actually done what he said he was going to do. He's been raised from the dead. The interesting thing is even though the disciples look upon it that way, these religious leaders focus now on this idea of resurrection. And we understand that there have been some arguments given down through the years in attempts to disprove the resurrection of Jesus Christ. One of those is very often called the swoon theory, that Jesus basically just became comatose and was then unconscious for hours, and once he was in the tomb, then he awakened. There's also the idea that some people have propagated, and you see the root of it here, and that is the idea that the disciples of Jesus actually stole his body after he died, and then they went around telling everybody that he had been resurrected, even though he hadn't been. Problem with that. There were many eyewitnesses, both of the death of Jesus and also his resurrection. Now let me ask you something. Is there anyone in the room here that doubts that Cleopatra lived, that Julius Caesar lived? Anybody here doubt that? Have you ever met either one of them? Walking down the street one day, has Cleopatra walked up to you and introduced herself? No, we understand this. We understand that history attests to the fact of all kinds of historical facts, and very often those facts have to do with people. You maybe have never really considered it or heard it that much, but there is overwhelming historical evidence to testify to the birth, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Probably few facts in history have more historical attestation to them than these things do. And yet people very commonly accept other things, but they don't very often accept the resurrection of Jesus. Now, why would that be true? Well, for a lot of reasons, but one of those is this, is how many people have you ever seen resurrected from the dead yourself? We know that there's a general rule, and that is that dead people stay dead, right? When people die, as much as very often, as much as we would love for them to be resurrected from the dead, we don't see that happening. It's like a scientific law that people are born, then they live for a while, and then they undergo physical death. Even secular historians give you the idea, or they give into the fact, that Jesus was a real person, that he really did live, and that he really did die. The problem is they give up when it comes to his resurrection. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15 these words. He said that Jesus appeared to Cephas, who's Peter, then to the 12. After that, he appeared to more than 500 brethren at one time, most of whom still remain into now. And what Paul is doing there is he's encouraging people, if you don't believe me, go and talk to these witnesses. They're still around. They saw it. Then he appeared to James, who was one of his brothers, then all the apostles, and last of all, as to one untimely born, he appeared to me. You see, guys, this New Testament in our Bible, it is the testimony of the apostles, of the reality of the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And what you're going to find very often they focus on when they're sharing the gospel with people, one of the things that they really pinpoint is the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That everything about Christianity hinges on a lot of points, but that happens to be one of the most central ones. And you need to understand, too, that the resurrection is the thing that turned James and Peter and John and all these other guys around. When it finally clicked, when they realized that Jesus really was resurrected from the dead, it becomes a very central part of everything they teach. We would like it if we could actually see Jesus ourselves. Remember the words of Thomas. I mean, we have this tendency to say, well, I will believe it when I what? When I see it. And I will not believe it until I do, right? Just remember the words of Thomas, whom we call Doubting Thomas, one of the apostles of Jesus. Unless I see in his hands the imprint of the nails and put my finger in the place of the nails and put my hand into his side, I will what? I will not believe it. One of the neat things, guys, about this is if you've ever studied the high priestly prayer in John chapter 17, Jesus prays for himself, he prays for the apostles, but then he also prays for those who are going to believe because of the testimony of those apostles who happen to be you and me, even today. Verse 64, therefore, command that the tomb be safeguarded for 3 days, otherwise the disciples of him may come and steal him and say to the people, he has arisen from the dead, and the last deception will be worse than the first. I want to propose something this morning that maybe you've never thought of. Because what we find in here is this idea that the Pharisees and the Sadducees are coming together, and they're saying with the idea that the disciples now are going to form a conspiracy, and what they're going to do is they're going to steal Jesus' body, and then they're going to go out and tell everybody that was resurrected, he was resurrected. But just remember this, guys. And gals, many of these men saw firsthand some of the miraculous things that Jesus had done. Healing people from all kinds of illnesses, casting out demons, They may not have been there, but they've heard recently that Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead in Bethany, very close by, and just a few weeks before, not even days before. Could it be? Could it be that some of these people, these men, were really afraid that Jesus really was going to raise from the dead? Were there people in the Old Testament that had died that came back to life? Yes. The last thing they want to see is this. Is for Jesus to walk out of the tomb living. Verse 65, Pilate said to them, "You have a guard. You make it as secure as you know how." It's almost in the sense that Pilate was saying, "Why are you bothering me with this? You have a guard. You just go out there and you make it as secure as you want to make it secure." We need to understand something, and that is this, is that the Roman authority was necessary for everything to take place so far. And even though Pilate had washed his hands of this whole Jesus business, he had allowed it to continue on, right? So what do? They proceed and they go out and they make the tomb secure. And the guard is set and a seal is put on the stone. Now maybe you've never thought about this, but I would imagine that tombs are typically constructed to keep people out, not necessarily to keep anybody in. Right? In other words, if you expect to be able to open a tomb, it's not necessarily from the inside out, it's from the outside in. They seal the stone that has been rolled over the entrance, presumably with a Roman seal placed upon it, which basically meant no one touches this. Probably wax or clay or something of the sort, but designed to warn anyone who had of their mind that they were going to break into the tomb and steal the body of Jesus. What if? Part of the thinking is this. As remote as it may sound, we know of instances where people have come back to life again. Maybe just to be on the very safest side we can possibly be, we want this tomb sealed on the outside so that even if Jesus is resurrected from the dead inside, he will not be able to get out. That sounds a little crazy, doesn't it? But we need to understand that these people, they were willing to do anything and everything that they could even possibly think about, any possibilities, to cover all their bases. What about this, guys and gals? I need to stop saying that. I say guys and gals all the time, don't I? What about this? What about the fact that we've already read the testimony that at the moment that Jesus died, that there were saints in the tombs in Jerusalem. The tombs were opened by an earthquake. Okay, so that should tell you something. They don't open from the inside out. They open from the outside in. And we're told that at the resurrection, they actually entered in to the city. I mean, what does that say? I mean, we need to understand something. When Jesus resurrected, he was not the only one. There were other people who resurrected too. At the moment Jesus died, were these guys aware of that? Did someone come to them and tell them? What do you think would have happened if someone in Jerusalem had bumped into David walking down the street? Do you think he would have kept the news to himself? Or maybe he would go and tell all of his friends. Or maybe he would go and tell these Sadducees and Pharisees who were supposed to be the religious leaders. Guess who I just saw? They certainly had to be aware of the talk that was going on, even if it was just talk in their mind. Stuff like that doesn't happen without people talking about it and the news spreading all over the place. I just want to challenge us with the idea that sometimes there are factors that we don't give a lot of credence to. They're involved in a lot of this stuff. The important thing, guys, this morning is this, is that we understand how key the resurrection of Jesus actually is to our faith. It has everything to do with Christianity, to the point that if you take the resurrection away, there is no Christianity. If you took the resurrection away, there was nothing for the apostles to go out and preach and teach. If you and I, in our witness to the world around us, we take it, we leave out the resurrection because we know that some people are going to have a hard time believing it. We're not presenting the gospel to people. It's impossible for you to present the gospel to anybody and leave the resurrection out, because if you do, then you're not giving them the gospel. And when we consider these things, we always have to remember the promises of God made to each one of us. And one of those is this, is our own grave will not hold us captive. That if we die before Jesus Christ comes into the world again, that our tomb will be opened up and we will walk out alive. And alive in a way that we have never understood being alive to be. Into the greatness of the glory of God. What we're saying here is that each one of us who truly believes in our Lord Jesus Christ, and even if we don't, if we die between now and the time He comes, we will have our own resurrection experience. Do you think that will convince us that there is such a thing as a resurrection? Quite likely. Next week, we are going to continue. We'll be getting into chapter 28. And let me just say that I'm praying right now about where we're going to go after we finish up Matthew. We've been here for over 2 years now, and so we're coming down to the tail end of it. And I know it's kind of weird that we're studying all of this stuff right around Christmas. We did take a couple of weeks off for the Christmas story. But what I'm hoping is that it'll be fresh on our minds and in our thoughts as we enter into the next big thing coming along, and that's Easter. It should really lay the ground for us a lot about that.